This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, June 13th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. When Bob Gunter started Kaloa Rum in Hawaii, he anticipated using local sugar cane to make rum to sell to his fellow Americans. One problem he discovered, selling to his fellow Americans on the mainland incurs massive shipping costs, all thanks to the Jones Act. We spoke this week. Tell us about your company.
Well, Kaloa Rum Company was formed in 2006 in Hawaii, and the intent was to establish a distillery to make rum from locally grown sugarcane on the island.
How long have you been in business?
We started bottling and selling rum in September of 2009, so we're just about at the 10-year mark at this point.
All right. So when you started doing this with the locally grown sugar cane, did you have any indication that shipping to the mainland would be such an expensive endeavor?
Frankly, no, and perhaps naively so. It was just something that we had not really thought much about. Obviously, being so remote in Hawaii, shipping is a major part of our lives. Most everything we consume in Hawaii is shipped in by ocean freight. So obviously, we knew that was out there. What I did not know was the extent to which the cost for that shipping, the freight in and out of Hawaii, would be as expensive and as limited in terms of options available would be. And it was really only until we really became established and began selling more and more product on the mainland U.S., therefore shipping product out of Hawaii to the mainland, and our production increased as we continued to grow and expand our business, obviously more and more input supplies and ingredients had to be shipped in from the mainland. And of course, you know, beginning to look very closely at the financials and seeing what, you know, what our costs were and how that was impacting our bottom line, we began looking for ways to, you know, to maximize our profitability. And it became glaringly apparent that the cost of freight was a major component to our overall expense of operations. So that is when I really began to look into that more deeply, and really began to question why our freight rates were so costly, and then began to discover, find out more about the Jones Act, and essentially from that point it was just putting two and two together, but it really wasn't until after about 4 years in, after we had been in business for about 4 years, we received an order for a sizable amount of rum for a retailer in Australia, which was exciting for us and represented our first foray into international markets. And so we worked out all of the details with different labeling requirements and so forth, and customs and what have you. And then, of course, we had to put together the logistics of getting the product from Hawaii to Australia. And then I realized that our options were very few, being that there are no direct shipping from Hawaii to Australia. So the only option was to ship first to the mainland, West Coast, Los Angeles, and then transship from Los Angeles to Sydney. And so we began scheduling that, setting it up, and working with our freight forwarders. And so we made it happen, but it was very costly and very revealing, in that the cost of freight for sending that 20-foot ocean container from Hawaii to the West Coast cost us, I believe it was $5,900, which is about typical. And but then the cost of shipping that container from Los Angeles to Sydney was $1,900. So a differential of $4,000. And that hit me like a slap in the face. And I remember saying, this can't be. This is just must be something wrong. But no, in fact, that was accurate. So therefore, you know, more than twice the distance that is from Los Angeles to Sydney than it is from Hawaii to Los Angeles, but yet it was $4,000 less costly. So, you know, that to me was the telling of the tale. And then I became more convinced and looked deeper again into, you know, the Jones Act and the impact on shipping in Hawaii. And, you know, realized that we really don't have many options. We have two shipping lines that are Jones Act compliant. You know, they essentially have a duopoly and the rates are what they are. And, you know, in fairness to those two companies, they, you know, have the onerous restrictions or requirements that are placed on them by the Jones Act. And that is, you know, of course, the ships have to be built in the U.S. They have to be crewed primarily by U.S. citizens, and they have to be owned by U.S. entities. So to a certain extent, they have to play by the rules, and that makes their operations more costly. Those costs are in turn passed on to all of us in Hawaii, not just manufacturers like ourselves. And so at the end of the day, we pay considerably more for shipping than anyone else would who would, you know, be able to ship in a non-Jones Act compliant environment.
How front and center is the Jones Act for the business community in Hawaii? I know that if you need to get inputs to your manufacturing process from the United States, you have to pay to have that shipped to you, and then to move your product back to the United States, you have to pay additionally to have that shipped to the mainland. So how front and center is this for members of the business community in Hawaii that would like to sell products to their fellow Americans?
Well, I know for a fact that shipping and not only the cost, but the very limited options available for manufacturers and others doing business in Hawaii is a concern. And it's something that everyone deals with, you know, on a continuing basis. My sense is, though, that that there are few who will at least admit knowing really much about the Jones Act and therefore what the impact of that is on their cost of business. But I've also begun just myself speaking to my peers, my fellow business people in the state, about it, and I'm finding that people are becoming more interested in knowing more about the Jones Act itself, and also, of course, the impact on freight and business, and so I think there's an awakening going on that's really sort of in its embryonic stage at this point, I would say. And I also find it interesting, and I'll have to say I've lived in Hawaii for 40 years, so I did not know anything about the Jones Act until I, you know, got involved with Kaloa Rum Company and learned firsthand, about the cost of freight and logistics, and you know I just began to look into it, and then you know. Became more knowledgeable and aware. So I think that's what's beginning to happen now in Hawaii with businesses in general. I do know that I've heard often expressed by business people that they're frustrated at not being able to ship directly to foreign markets such as Japan. And Hawaii has a particularly strong relationship both economically and with the visitor industry with Japan. And there's a lot of interest in Japanese companies and of course, residents to buy products made in Japan, made in Hawaii. But there's no, other than air cargo, there's no direct means of shipping to Japan. So, you know, when we speak of the Jones Act, to me, it's not only just about cost, but it's also about options other than Jones Act compliant vessels that would open up markets that are currently not available. But I think there's a growing awareness about the Jones Act. There needs to be a lot more discussion and conversation about it, in my opinion, in Hawaii. And I've sort of taken it on myself to sort of speak out and to talk to people who are willing to listen about it, just so that people are aware. And it's, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, it's not just for my business or the business that we're in at Kaloa Rum Company, but it affects all of us in Hawaii, consumers, because 90% of what we consume comes in by ocean freight. So we're all paying a premium, whether we realize it or not.
You could have goods shipped from other countries. It is goods that are shipped from the United States that face these restrictions, right?
Yes. I don't think there's any restriction for a foreign vessel to come into port and offload goods and return to that foreign port. My understanding is that foreign vessels that perhaps sail by, say, from Japan, sailing east, they pass close by Hawaii and go on to the West Coast and offload much of their goods. They are precluded from picking up goods on the West Coast and then dropping it off in Hawaii on its way back to Japan, which would be a matter of convenience and would offer, again, another option other than the two shipping lines, with their schedules being what they are. But these foreign vessels are precluded from doing that. But as far as I know, there's nothing that would restrict direct foreign market port to Hawaii and return. I don't think there's a restriction for that.
Bob Gunter is president and CEO of Kaloa Rum. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.